Okay. Well, today is September 12th, and we're really excited. I'm really happy that Marilyn is able to join us today because 2 weeks ago at our last PLC, we talked to Recycle Force. And what these two organizations are very different in many ways, but in certain ways, they've got some similarities which are outstanding. And I would call it social entrepreneurship. It's a social enterprise. What, for those of you who weren't at the last one, we were talking to Recycle Force, and what this was a combination organization. They had a .org and a .com. RecycleForce.com recycles computers in Indianapolis, and they hire people from the communities. In their case, they started hiring ex-offenders to train them to take computers apart. They would do deconstruction, all kinds of solid waste management, and taking buildings apart, mostly centered around electronics. And then they would derive income from that. They decided this last year, they had attended a couple of our all grantee meetings, and they decided, let's do a .org, let's do a environmental job training program so we can bring people in and train them, and then we can try to get them jobs. But if we can't get them jobs, we'll put them to work in our .com, into our for-profit corporation, so that we could give them jobs. We can teach them environmental education, different types of programs, whether it's hazmat or solid waste or deconstruction, lead, asbestos, whatever the skill might be. And we're basically developing a farm team. We have a feeder into another organization, or we can also place them in jobs. So that's the very similar but different. And the different part is we're talking about Indianapolis in that case. In this case, we're fortunate enough to have Coalfields, and I'm really happy to have Marilyn talk to us. And here's the similarity. They're a social enterprise. And we'll let her talk to us about their I don't know if it's six divisions now, but they can train. They are helping their community. They're training people, and they're placing people. So with that, before we get started, though, with Marilyn, we always have news from Washington. Anything coming out of Washington, Heather?
Yes, we got a nice little message from them. They just wanted to reach out and let you all know that the JT coordinators may be reaching out to grantees looking to highlight graduates and or programs for a blog commemorating the 20th anniversary of the JT program. If anyone is interested in featuring their program or a graduate on the blog, please reach out to your project officer. They're looking for like a concise one or two paragraph submission that highlights the successes. And if you want to include a photo or two, that is encouraged as well. So if you're interested in participating in that opportunity, please reach out to your project officer. And then we also got some information from Pete, P-E-T-E, one of our partners here, about the CCHST refreshers. So they do have the 2019 refreshers out and available, and we'll send that out on the listserv probably a little bit just after the PLC call. But for those of you that might be interested in these train-the-trainer opportunities, the Greatest Institute will be June 3rd through the 14th in 2019 in Davenport, Iowa. They have Disaster Site Response for Trainers Institute, which will be January 7th through 11th, 2019, and that'll take place in Fort Pierce, Florida. We've got the PEAT Instructor Professional Development Conference. That'll be March 27th and 29th of 2019 in Little Rock, Arkansas. As well as, let's see, they've got one in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania on April 23rd through the 25th. July 16th through 18th, they'll be in North Manakota, Minnesota. And they also are having a designing and delivering an effective training, sort of a pre-conference workshop for the Arkansas dates. That would be, this would happen on March 24th through the 26th. So just keep an eye out on your email. I'll send that out on the listserv a little bit after the PLC call is over.
We'll put them in the notes, so you'll have the website that you can go to those. And and announcements. And PEED is our CCCHT, it's Community College Consortium for Health and Safety Training. It would be our sister organization. We work with them very closely, and they're working on the side of train the trainers. So they're, while we're a workforce development program, they're a train the trainer program, primarily in health and safety. We work in not only health and safety for our workers, but doing environmental, getting environmental jobs. So you'll hear these acronyms around PEED, CCHST. They're both the same organization. You'll hear about us, HMTRI. You'll also hear about TAB, and we often reference TAB, that's Technical Assistance to Brownfields. The difference between TAB and HMTRI is we are on the workforce side, workforce development, creating jobs and training people for jobs. TAB is Technical Assistance to Brownfields, and these are, you know, the government just loves acronyms. They service all the ARC grants, the assessment, the financing, the cleanup grants. These are grants that you probably have in your community that actually do the cleanup. And they are not associated with us. They are in the same smokestack as we are in terms of giving technical assistance. Their technical assistance is aimed at people who are doing assessments and cleanup. Our audience and customers basically are you all, which is job training. So that's kind of the difference. You hear these acronyms being thrown around. But we like to include TAB activities in some of our announcements because it's important that the job trainers coordinate with the cleanup people and the assessment people. So we often, in my notes that you'll be getting maybe tomorrow, we're going to push it a little bit because of the weather. You'll see things that TAB is having. And we encourage them, our grantees, to go to some of TAB webinars. It isn't necessarily directly applicable to job training, but their grants are structured the same way. For example, they're going out on an RFP this next month, where we'll be doing it in February. Their grants are structured a little differently. The RFPs are different, but it's interesting to see what they're doing, and particularly if there are brownfields programs in your community, whether it's cleanup or assessment pilot or revolving loan fund. So that's kind of a quick run through of these acronyms that we probably need to keep reminding people of. So Heather, anything else in terms of HMTRI that we should let everyone know about?
I believe that's it that I have at the top of my head. Bruce or Mike, did you have anything else you wanted to share?
No, we're working on some projects that we'll be sending out here in the future. One is a social media directory that Bruce is working on. He's going to be sending out a request for, if you're doing social media, try to respond to that, because we're going to put it to gather it into one document, and we find that it's helpful to other grantees to see what maybe Cypress Mandela does on social media, what Coalfield, in fact, Coalfield has a great, so in fact, I'm going to put it in the post-session notes. I would encourage everyone to go to the Coalfield website. It talks all about their program, a great website, social media site. So,
hey, Mike.
Yes, Bruce.
If I could jump in, we will have a draft of the information that we received a few months back up on the website this week. It'll be on the Toolbox website. It'll be a draft of the social media directory. And the next time that we solicit information, it's going to be for the employee finder first, the certified employee finder, where we ask about your training programs, what you offer, et cetera. And then we'll do another after that, seeking of information for updating the social media directory.
Great. I'm glad you clarified that for me. But these are helpful when you want to find out what other people are doing, what kind of courses they've got, and that type of thing. Well, I'd like to get into Coalfield and what they're doing, and I will let Marilyn talk about all the great things they've done and how they're operating. Marilyn? Oh, is Marilyn there? Maybe she's off the maybe
I got for some reason it dropped the call. So
okay.
But I'm back.
You know, it's funny because we do open mics and live calls, and it can be a challenge sometimes. But to me, it's just kind of exciting because we've had cases where someone will put us on hold and we got to listen to music for 3 minutes or someone in the background. I mean, if this was a formal, really formal webinar, I would be going ballistic. But we've done 197 of these calls, and there's been a handful of them that have ended that way. But it's kind of fun. I like to keep open mics because if someone has a question, we don't have a problem with interruptions or anything like that. So, well, Marilyn, you missed all the good things I told you about, talked about you. Well, sorry.
You all hear me okay? On my end. Can you all hear me?
We can hear you. How about?
Oh, okay, good.
How about Heather and Bruce? Can you all hear Marilyn?
She was quiet at first, but the last comment she made came through nice and clear. We'll let you know if we have trouble hearing.
Yeah,
okay. Right now and then I'm getting some breakup, but it could be because of where I am. And just to like set the tone for this, as you mentioned, I am with a nonprofit organization based out of Wayne County, West Virginia, and I'm currently sitting outside of a 96,000 square foot former clothing factory / brownfield site that our organization purchased in 2013. That we're rehabbing into a center for all of our social enterprises. And the factory is currently undergoing a renovation through an EDA grant. So we've got, I just moved my car because I had to make room for the cement mixer, if that tells you anything about my situation right now. I could have bad reception because of my location. But it's all very, very positive. And so let me just start, if I could, with a little bit of background about who we are and what we do. Being in the coal fields of West Virginia, we know that our economy is undergoing some major structural changes right now with the decline in coal that really started in 2015. It's always been boom and bust cycles, but starting in about 2015, we saw just this crash of the coal economy that many people think will be, just marks a permanent change of how we're looking at coal as a fuel source and supplies and this and that. But what that did was leave a tremendous number of communities throughout southern West Virginia and central Appalachia with no jobs, tons of out-migration, people losing hope, a lot of economic trauma. So our founder, who was from the region, his name is Brandon Dennison, he had been working on some mission projects and helping to rebuild in foreign land. Decided that really he wanted to use his gifts here in West Virginia. And while in grad school, he started investigating this idea of social enterprise, which is a business development model that combines, the flexibility and innovation, often thought of as being part and parcel of the nonprofit community, combined with the market drivers and economic force of the business community. And a social enterprise really takes the best of both of those and is able to create a business structure that can honor what we call a triple bottom line. So whereas most pure businesses are profit-driven, social enterprises are often looking at not just profit, but also social returns on investment and environmental returns on investment. Are you there?
Oh, we're all here.
Yes, buddy Andrew.
Okay, good, good, good.
Great.
Okay, good. So, so he started Coalfield Development with this idea that we could use market forces to help diversify our stagnating economies throughout the southern coal fields. And building these businesses was also really important because, what we talk a lot about in terms of job training where we are, getting people certified for jobs that don't exist in the area, it's almost cruel. And we saw years and years of people offering job training, certificate programs, one flavor after another. And it didn't matter really how many of these certificates you had, because in order to put them to use, you would have to leave. And people are, they don't want to leave their communities. So Coalfield's model was built on building social enterprises in different sectors, and I'll go through those in just a minute. And then what we do is we directly hire people into these social enterprises. So we are both an employer and a trainer. We're working on both ends of the workforce pipeline, and that makes us a little bit different in this workforce development community, since we are actually the employer too. Now, our enterprises are, as I said, they're designed to diversify the economy in these communities and counties that have really just experienced a monoeconomy of coal. So we have built enterprises in sustainable ag, in sustainable green construction. In fact, we're a licensed general contractor. We have a solar installation enterprise. We have a mine land reclamation enterprise. And then we have a collection of enterprises that loosely fall under creative placemaking. So we own and operate two fine woodworking shops and a coffee shop. So all of these enterprises give us an opportunity to hire people who would otherwise be unemployed. And generally the people we hire tend to be young adults, although we do work with transitioning people out of coal mining jobs that want to start a new career. And they don't have to have skills in the industry. We do on-the-job training. And this is something else that makes us a little bit distinct. Our training model and workforce development model spans 3 years per individual, which seems extraordinary in some regards, but that is the length of time that we have found it takes to get someone deeply skilled at a job, certified in a lot of professional areas. But the thing that we really focus on is helping people achieve an associate's degree, because we believe that in a place like ours that really has not a focus on higher education, that rebuilding the workforce takes that sort of kind of bold step to help people achieve an associate's degree. So regardless of what enterprise people are associated with, they work what we call a 33-6-3 model, where they spend 33 hours a week in on-the-job training. And that's, working on small...
Working
in small three to six-person teams with a crew chief that also serves as a mentor, and they learn, all the practices and all the skills they need to help drive the business, because these enterprises are businesses in the marketplace. Every week, they are engaged in community and technical college coursework, working toward that associate's degree. And then 3 hours a week, they're working on personal development skills. And in the personal development realm, we help them do financial planning, budgeting. We talk a lot about citizenship, engagement, long-term decision-making. And we also use that time to help individuals discover challenges and barriers to successful full-time employment down the road. So, it's a very comprehensive model. And, of course, part of that is under the workforce training. We also offer certificate programs in the HAZWOPR and the HAZCOM and the OSHAs and mold remediation and asbestos removal, things that we find we need as a business to have on staff, and then also things that we know the community needs in terms of having businesses developed. In fact, we just had one of our construction crew members take a job in a newly formed asbestos removal company in his hometown. So we're really excited about seeing opportunities like that. So first, let me just take a breath there and see if you all have any questions about our overall model.
Yeah, the more I'm thinking, I'm thinking of all
one question is, we do have open mics, and someone's on our someone's got us on their speakerphone, and we do pick up their conversation. And of course, we really don't want to hear what's in the background. So, if you could hear us, whoever is on speakerphone, silence your speakerphones. He may not be able to hear us, but we'll have to look around otherwise. Sorry for this interruption on that. I do have a question though.
Sure.
And maybe you'll be getting to recruitment. So that
yes.
You're 3 years is a long time. Are they working while they're being trained?
Yes, they are literally our employees. We start them at $9.50 an hour, and they can work up to $12.50 an hour, depending on how they perform. Every employee is evaluated every 2 weeks to see if they are, regressing or advancing in a series of 12 dimensions that we lay forth that are necessary for personal and professional success. So we have different management levels within our crews. So the first one is called a green hat. So you come in, you're completely untrained, you work for a while. If you show leadership skills, we'll promote you to a green hat position, which works more closely with the crew chief in planning and executing leadership roles. And then we also have an assistant crew chief position. So you can progress throughout training.
Just like one
training
last thing,
period.
I told you that when we were talking
and
about this.
And we find that
they'll tell you 30 days afterwards because it's a contract.
We're
going
to, excuse me, Marilyn, I'm going to try to, hopefully this gentleman will hang up on that call. Whoever's on a speakerphone, can you please silence us or hang us up?
It was only because of the way they were treating us. They wasn't treating us.
I'm sorry. I just couldn't tell if they were asking a question.
One of the problems sometimes we have is we ask people not to put us on speakerphone. I think
I'm
kicked
off about it.
If you don't mind, I mean, I'll just keep talking and then maybe they'll hang up. But in terms of recruitment, we recruit a lot out of Votech programs, and we also do a lot of word-of-mouth recruitment. Some people have questions around, whether it's hard for people to, say, embrace an opportunity to engage in, solar panel installation in coal country. Some people, they think, no one's going to take an opportunity that they see biting into this legacy industry. And what we find is that's just not the case. People want to work. People are talented. They just want an opportunity to use those skills. And we find that in all of the enterprises that we own and operate. We do know that not everyone is going to graduate with that associate's degree. The people that do, we refer to as coalfield champions. If you come out of our program and you have, 8 professional certificates, you've achieved an associate's degree, and you've been working on the job for 2.5 to 3 years, then we, that's kind of the pinnacle. And we know that 100% of the people that have come through, and I think we have 17 graduates right now that have achieved all of that, they have all gone on to full-time careers and are doing well. What we find often is that we have folks that get about year and a half of training under their belt. They've learned a whole lot about how to be employees, and they're snatched up by other employers in the community. And we also consider that a success. We are not going to tell anyone that if they can go from making, $10.50 an hour with us to, a $20, $22 an hour job, we say that sounds like a good decision. But we do encourage them to maintain working towards pension. And often, very encouragingly, we find that the employer, once we talk with them, will often agree to allow them to continue. working toward that associate's degree and being flexible with that employee so they can achieve that, which we think is really helping to kind of turn the tide with how our employers view education and, you know, what they're valuing in the workforce. So, you know, it is a model that we're now looking at replicating. What we want to do to replicate it and to take it to scale throughout the region is work through other nonprofits. You know, we wake up thinking about our area, but we know other people wake up thinking about their areas and trying to figure out how to help them. So we have an initiative, Horizon Development Partners, and these are nonprofits that want to engage in social enterprise. That's a key piece for us because we do believe that the social enterprise model will help diversify our economy. Nonprofit organizations that engage in it, but it's a big bite for a lot of organizations. You know, going into business anywhere is hard. Going into business kind of as a nonprofit in a place where there's not a lot of business is even harder. But we figured some things out. We want to share this and help other nonprofits increase their sustainability and generate revenue for their communities while modeling these really good entrepreneurial practices, thus creating additional employment opportunities. So we're getting ready to reach out to beyond our pilot of our seed program. Right now we're working with two organizations. In the next 2 years, we hope that's 10 organizations all engaged in this type of work, but flavored to meet the needs of their communities and their people. So
I would like to just remind the gentleman that had us on speakerphone, please don't put us on speakerphone because we're picking up your background conversation. So you could put us on don't put us on hold, put us on mute if you're going to have a side conversation or leave the room, because we do try to keep it as quiet. We do have open mics. Okay, I'm sorry for everyone that we had this disturbance, but I think we're okay now. Marilyn, you can continue. I'm sorry I interrupted, but I wanted to make
quite,
that statement.
No, quite all right. Okay. And how much time? Does this end at 2:30?
We're flexible now. We're flexible. And you get extra minutes because of the disruption.
I've got just maybe another 10 minutes before I have to jump. But I think, you know, what I would really like to know is, you know, what we learned in terms of lessons is that paying, I know it's really hard to find the money to pay people to come in for training. We think that here, that's just crucial. And, you know, we think that if in an area as economically depressed as ours, having people come in for as, you know, lengthy training as we do, I mean, it's just not possible. But we want to honor people's, you know, commitment by providing some paid experience. We also find out that when you pay people, it opens up other conversations we can have with them around budgeting, around money management. Financial literacy is a huge problem in our region. So any opportunity we have to talk with people about how to manage their funds is important. And I know from the last gathering there in Alexandria, you know, a lot of people were talking about how to approach the soft skills, the life skills, and the personal development. Making it a hallmark program. Other aspect. Yes?
Oh, yeah, we're here.
Okay. So, and it is wraparound, and it is led by a personal development coordinator that we have on staff. And then, as I said, the crew chiefs also are in a really strong mentor role with their crew members and are able to alert us whether, you know, someone's having some sort of problem that we need to address. Now,
you know, you're very similar to, as I said before, very similar to Recycle Force in that you've got a strong mentoring, you're employing people. Has has your for-profit been able to recycle money back to your, you're all nonprofit. You're not really a for-profit,
yeah.
Are you?
No, no, no. We're not nonprofit. We do not have a for-profit arm. We run our enterprises as nonprofits, and that's perfectly fine for us, you know, as a nonprofit to do. It's program related income for us. And what we have is a desire to spin our businesses off. We want to build them and then release them into the working wilds, where they can, you know, grow and expand beyond what we can do to support as a thought.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Excellent. Do you, when your students graduate, so you're actually kind of spinning them off into your other organizations so they get a job and you track them. Do you work at all with the WIBs at all?
Field. I'm sorry? Yes, the workforce.
Do you work at all with workforce?
Yes, we do. We do indeed.
And
we work
do you
with,
use that for recruitment when you're recruiting?
We do. We do. A lot of our folks come through the local workforce offices. And, you know, we try to – that really depends on, you know, where we are. We're right now, we're in 5 counties, and they're not contiguous counties. So, you know, we have different relationships in different places, and, you know, recruitment looks a little bit different in our county, in our different county areas. What we are able to do that I think also helps, another lesson learned, is that since we are kind of spread out and we have all of these, you know, different businesses working in different places, once a month we bring everyone together, all of our employees and crew members, and we have what we call a crew member council. And it's a time for people to share what their business is working on, you know, how they're reaching out to customers, what they're learning, what issues they may be having, what challenges. And it's a really rich time for us and them to network and to share these experiences. So we're really excited about what that's going to look like when we have a group of other nonprofit organizations involved.
How many people do you usually bring into your environmental program? How big a group do you can you have in a cohort? Oh, Marilyn?
Hello?
Yes.
Oh,
yes, can you hear me?
This is Mike. Yeah, I can hear you. Can you hear me? I was questioning how many you might be able to bring into a cohort, an environmental cohort.
Well, we're actually, we typically haven't worked in a cohort model. People enter as the businesses need employees. Like, so if one of our social enterprises is starting to pick up steam, they may hire on, you know, 3 or 4 more crew members. They have to prove to ourselves that, you know, we have a consistent cash flow that will support those people for 3 years. We don't, you know, we're not going to take someone on for 6 months and then lay them off. That's not right. What we are about. But we're starting to look at a cohort model where we take on, say, a group of 15 to 20 folk, and run them through a 6-month, like, pre-employment pipeline experience, where we are able to get them those professional certificates right up front, do a deep dive into the personal development work so we can figure out what their barriers to success might be, you know, earlier on, and then also give them a taste of what all of our enterprises are about so they can maybe choose better which one they may be, you know, more closely related to, or, you know, have an affinity for. And so, you know, this is a something that we're probably going to pilot in 2019, but really one of the challenges that we've had, and of course our workforce training programs are open to the public, not just to our folks, but we've had, you know, it's sometimes difficult to schedule around people's work schedules and school schedules. So trying to, you know, work in even like a 40-hour Haswapper course can be a challenge when folks are also in school and also, you know, have sales commitments and deadlines. So we think that if we can get people trained up, if you will, in a six-month period that would also be paid, we think that would be valuable and might help everyone succeed. So
you're kind of going in the direction of Recycle Force again that I mentioned, and also Cypress Mandela, where they're bringing in people continuously, not necessarily mm-hmm. a cohort model, but when they identify people, it's almost like a tryouts or screening. When they identify people who are motivated to get, say, HazWhopper, they'll get them together and they'll do the HazWhopper training. And they might go on to confined space, for example, if you were doing something in that area. So it's an interesting model that several grantees are trying and migrating to. It sounds like you're all mm-hmm. trying this experiment that's kind of seems to be working for you.
Well, yeah, it is. And I talked with Recycle Force quite a bit at the last gathering. And, you know, that it definitely is some similarities there. And I think we did kind of flock together. And I think that, you know, this direct employment piece is really, really crucial in places that don't have a lot of employment opportunities. And it's a, you know, like here, as I said early on, if we weren't the employer, we would just be training people, you know, how to leave more quickly.
Right.
And
you
that,
know,
that doesn't help our communities.
But you're doing something that's really valuable to EPA because they've always struggled with rural programs. They have a very
mm-hmm.
difficult time with rural. If you're in Boston, you know, you're in an urban area, it's a lot easier because there's lots of
mm-hmm.
employers. Tribal programs have the same problem. They've never really been able to keep a tribal program going because they want to leave the reservation and there's no jobs on the reservation. So the alternative here is exactly what you're doing. If you're in a rural area and you're considering developing a program, this is something to consider, that you place your own people in some sort of a community development corporation or a social
mm-hmm.
entrepreneurship corporation.
Right. I mean, we got started in housing because there was a direct need for affordable housing in Wayne, West Virginia, and there's generally funding for housing rehab or housing development. And, so those dollars are there. The thing that we did a little bit different is that we became the licensed general contractor. There was none, so it wasn't like we were competing with a big bunch of, for-profit businesses. We were the only contractor in town taking on an old abandoned building that no one in their right mind would have touched, pulled down housing development money, and took a whole bunch of really green people who didn't know how to do construction, hooked them up with a couple of construction guru mentor folk, and built housing, that was needed for the community. So we took this absolute liability for the community, this old, kind of abandoned factory building that was attracting crime, put local people to work in it, created housing units that now the Housing Development Authority are overseeing and managing, created community space. And we very carefully talked to the community about what they wanted in their community, and they wanted a coffee shop. There was no place to get a cup of coffee. So now coffee, nice little place. You can come in, have a cappuccino, sit down, have a business meeting, have a sandwich. People are living there, they're working there, and it's just, made the community that much more vibrant by putting people to work. So there's all kinds of opportunities to do that type of work in America, and I'm trying to figure out how that type of work can be supported. I think is just really important, and I'm we're really glad to be part of pioneering some solutions that works for rural, and we also think
you may have the one solution that is work because nothing has been.
Mm-hmm.
found yet that does. Does anyone have any questions, Marilyn? We're really fortunate to have her today, and I know she has to leave in a few minutes. Any questions anyone might have? I think it's a model that our rural and tribal prospective grantees who may be considering one of these programs should probably look at. And is it okay, Marilyn, if they contact you, if they have questions
we'd
of how you did
it? We do as many people as we can. I got a call from a group in Manitoba, Canada, here in just a little bit. So we will share, you know, whatever we're doing, whatever's working, warts and all, because we do want this to work, and we really value the partnership with EPA. We really appreciate the opportunity.
Yeah. Say hello to Brandon for us. We were really impressed with what Brandon did back then, and we talked to him when he was just beginning to think about this and working on this in the early stages, and he's quite an impressive person. He came to one of our grantee programs, too. So I want to thank you for your participation under a little bit of abnormal activity, but you did well.
Thank you so much.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Does
someone have a question?
Yes. I just want to know more specifically what this this program that you're talking about is. Hello?
Which program might that be?
The one that you're implementing there.
Is the Environmental Workforce Program. This is actually what Cofield did. Pardon?
I may not have actually clarified that it was the Environmental Workforce Program is the one that we are we have a grant through EPA that we use to provide the professional certificates right now for our crew members and others in the community.
Basically,
workforce
program. If you'd like to get on the PLC list, and I'm not sure if you're a new caller. Heather, could you give her your email address?
Absolutely. It's hkballou@eicc.edu.
And if you just send your contact information to her, what we do is there are about 50 active grantees, and there are many prospective grantees who want to develop environmental workforce programs. The issue is that many are in urban areas. There's lots of environmental jobs. They're looking for people. But the most distressed areas and communities are the rural areas and Native American communities. And the question is can you or is it possible to develop an environmental workforce program that can give relief to underserved, unemployed people in rural areas? And it's been a struggle for 20 years. And Cofield and Recycle Force and a few others that we're trying to identify have gone about this in terms of not just having a program by itself, but combining it with social entrepreneurship or having partners where they're part of a bigger program. And we'll be talking about that later. Another approach is to combine all your nonprofits into one, and that's basically what Cofield has done. They're combining all their nonprofits
Michael?
To get more powerful. Yes, sir. Yes, ma'am. Hello?
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 Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Can you hear me? Okay, I'm going to have to jump to another meeting now, but I was afraid I was going to break off the call before
you won't.
I had a chance
to say.
You won't.
This is a conference call, and before you, as you hang up, that's fine. I want to thank you, Marilyn. You're bringing up this whole topic of rural brownfields and how you can succeed, and it appears that you're doing it. So thank you very much.
Well,
I'm going to send
you
up with notes in the next day or so.
I really appreciate your time.
Well, thank you very much. And everybody on the – okay, see you soon. Anyone else on the call, I appreciate you participating. We had a few technical difficulties, but our next PLC is –
I apologize
for
the technical difficulties. It was me.
Oh, well, hey, next time, listen, it happens. You're not the only one. Actually, to give you solace, one of our biggest problems one time was the regional coordinator. So she'd always put us on hold, and we'd have to listen to music for 10 minutes. So that's
I will be
that's
a multitasking, and I forgot what I was doing.
Well, I hope you're busy. That's always a good thing.
But it was good. It was an interesting show, though, interesting program. I did get quite a bit out of it, because I'm from New Bedford, Massachusetts, and we're in a urban, rural-type community area with a lot of brownfields and Superfund sites, so.
Yeah, you've got a lot of issues up there, and actually there's been a lot of activities in New Bedford over different periods of time. So are you thinking of submitting a proposal, or do you...
Yes, we are. Right now we're in the process of reorganizing our network of community groups in the city of New Bedford with the Workforce Investment Board hopefully leading the charge for us, and we expect to participate this next round.
Good. Well,
we've been listening for the last year or so.
Oh, good.
You know, trying to get because we've been there before. Now we're trying to get back there with a new concept.
Yeah, I remember. Do you remember Buddy at all, Buddy?
I'm Buddy.
Oh, you are Buddy. Oh, okay.
I'm Buddy. Yeah. How are
Buddy,
you?
We worked with you. We worked with you ages ago. I mean,
ages ago. But I think the first time we did the first one was probably the 1999 or 2000 or 2001.
Yep. Yep. Well, Buddy, you know, I'm sure I'll be talking to Myra and she'll say hello, Buddy.
Okay.
you guys are a great example of someone who
and
was
and I'm just so glad you guys have kept this up so many years, because this is really, really an important venue to get you act together, so to speak, and I appreciate it.
Well, EPA is celebrating the 20th, so make sure that you're on the PLC list. If you're not getting post-session notes, just send your contact information to Heather,
okay.
HK at EICC.com.
Oh, I've got all your stuff, so that's
okay.
Not a problem.
Great. Okay. Anything else from anybody? Okay. Well, we'll see you on the 26th, and have a great couple of weeks.
All righty. Thank you.
Okay.
Bye.
Thank you. Bye.